from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman and hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 7, recorded Monday, February 20th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Automated QA, makers of Test Complete, providing automated testing of Windows, .NET Framework, Java, and web applications. Online at www.automatedqa.com. And by peterbloom.com. Start with better controls, finish with better sites. Online at peterblum.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.syscon.com. In this episode, Scott covers tools and technologies around XML.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. And Scott, before we get going, we want to give a shout out to our friends over at the Polymorphic Podcast, polymorphicpodcast.com, who are just celebrating their one-year anniversary.
Yeah, I really admire the stuff that Craig's been doing over there at Polymorphic Podcast. We even stole one of his JavaScript rollovers recently.
That's right.
Put it up on Hansel Minutes, and we're trying to get that tweaked. Craig's put together a really solid show for quite a while now, and we really appreciate his support of Hansel Minutes, and we wanted to give him a shout out.
So the topic today is XML. It's a kind of a big topic. You've sort of narrowed it down into a few choice subtopics. What are those going to be?
XML is a big topic, and for a lot of people, they really are just angle bracket delimited files. Even in large companies, you'll find people parsing XML in ways that maybe aren't as effective as they could be. And at my company, we often deal with really large XML files. We'll deal with a file that might be dropped in with a list of bills that need to be paid that might be, a half gigabyte or a gigabyte in size with, tens or hundreds of thousands of records.
Yeah.
And there are many different ways to deal with XML. And ever since MS XML was introduced around the VB5, VB6 days, there was a class of solution that I called the select single node solution that people are still using today, right? This is load XML up in a DOM.
Right.
And say select nodes or select single node and poke out that value that you want. I mean,
right.
We've all done that. I'm sure you've done that.
Sure.
When you load XML up into a DOM, you're using up a lot of memory. You're having to do a big, complete, thorough parsing of that XML document. And often people are loading stuff into a DOM either just to extract one little bit of information or more often to translate that document into a different format.
Right.
So maybe if I have a 10 megabyte XML document, it might get loaded up and take 30 megs of memory, and that can be a real problem. One of the things that I like to avoid is what I call caterpillar-style XML management. So this is when, if you imagine a caterpillar, when the back legs of the caterpillar start walking up towards the front, and then the back of the caterpillar gets really, really tall. It's like loading up all this stuff into the XML document, and it
right.
gets big, 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 and then it sits there for a second. And then you hold this thing in memory for a moment. And then you start walking away, and then you pull your information out of the XML document. And for a really effective XML transformation, or whether that, and I don't mean XSLT, but I mean literally transformation of XML to another format using anything, you want to avoid that kind of caterpillar style development where you load something up, hold it for a second, and then spit it back out again. And
okay.
using XML readers and XML writers can help you do that.
All right. So XML reader and XML writer are classes in the framework that that work in this space. What? How do you use these things? They sound like streams to me. Are they streams?
They can sit on top of streams, exactly. So streams are like byte arrays.
Yeah.
This is an interesting thing that you brought up. The concept of streams is something that .NET has introduced to make the idea of byte arrays and arrays of information a lot simpler. I was working with some guys at Carillion recently doing some pair programming, and I realized that amongst .NET programmers, in my opinion, particularly in my case, C# programmers, there are two types of folks. There are the folks that lean hard on the language, and there are the folks that lean hard on the library. And I was doing some pair programming with a fella who was a expert C++ programmer. And he was doing some manipulation of some byte array data in its raw form and was writing C# as if it were C++. Because you can write C++ in any language. You could be a very C++-y VB programmer, right?
Right.
You probably come upon VB.net code that's been written, and you just look at it, and the variable names, you say, there's been a C++ person in this code. I can smell it.
SZ.
Exactly. LPSE, SDR. So this individual leaned on the language very hard, while I lean on the base class library, but have less deep knowledge about the right things to do as far as keywords within the language. So between us, we were very well placed. He was poking around inside of a byte array when, in fact, a stream reader, kind of a forward-only view of a byte array within the .NET base class library, would have been the more appropriate thing to do for him to manipulate this data the way that he wanted to.
Right.
I learned something, he learned something, but it really underscored the fact that the base class library has been thought about at such a depth that it's so much more about the libraries than it is about the language for a lot of different problems.
It's been a standard theme on .NET Rocks about, you know, reinventing the wheel when you really should have cracked the help file.
Well, and it's so difficult, though, because the base class library is so complicated. And I think that system.xml is one of those places where you could just live there. There's so much going on. So an XML reader, like the XML text reader and validating reader, are forward-only views on some XML, while the DOM loads that XML up and holds it in memory. A lot like back in the day in VB5 and VB6, we had forward-only record sets and static record sets.
Right.
I'm sure you know more about that than anybody.
Yeah, sure. Static being that never changes underneath. Whereas they also had dynamic key sets, which would change, the data would change on you.
Exactly. Yeah. And when beginner developers started using Visual Basic, they always went for the static stuff because that seemed to be the most logical way to do things. And one of the tips that was constantly passed around was, oh no, use a forward only. If you don't need to go back and forth over the data, spin through it once. Use the forward only stuff.
Yeah.
The XML text reader is one of those examples where if you're going to be running through an XML document and you really don't want to load it up into memory, if you're going to be doing something a lot, if you're going to have a very fast XML access to your data and you want the memory footprint to be very flat, you don't want that entire document to get loaded up into memory, the text reader is the most efficient way to do things. It's forward only and it's read only.
So it does some memory management where it loads data up in chunks and cursors through it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's actually loading it as it goes. It's walking through that stream, whatever you pass it, as it goes. And it never actually loads the entire document. It's just looking a few nodes ahead.
Okay.
And as you've heard of SAX,
right.
The SAX style parsing is kind of push style parsing where you start parsing XML and the SAX engine starts to announce, hey, I found an element. Hey, I found an attribute. Hey, I found an end element. It's hollering at you all the time.
Right.
XML text reader and the XML reader style of things is the reverse of that. It is a pull style where are saying while reader.read, and then each atom of an XML document, including whitespace, if you've told the XML reader to care about whitespace, is a node. I was parsing some OFX recently. It's an open financial exchange format, and they have some text nodes within the document just floating around, and I had to decide whether I cared about those or not, whether the white space was in fact significant.
Yeah.
So as you go next, and you say, pulling through this reader, going read, each node is a type. Everything from the comments, like you'll actually see comments go by. When you're using an XML text reader, it is the absolutely most efficient use of memory, but it is read-only. And by itself, the XML text reader doesn't do any validation. It won't validate your XML against an XSD, which is why folks then use the XML validating reader. So this is a reader that is pretty fast compared to the DOM, and it does automatic validation, but it's 2 to 3 times slower than the XML text reader.
Okay.
So things get real slow real fast. Now, comparatively, the DOM, the XML document that we're all familiar with, is another 2 or 3 times slower than the XML text reader. So we can, we're looking at potentially 6 to 9, maybe 10 times slower when you start using a DOM.
Now we're talking about
memory issues.
We're talking about .NET 2.0 here.
We're talking about really any version of .NET.
Okay, because I do remember you, or do recall you talking about a version of an XML component that was much faster in 2.0.
The XSLT transform in .NET 2.0, the XSL compiled transform, is way faster.
Okay,
than in
but the rest of these are typically about the same speed?
I believe that almost everything in .NET 2.0 has received a speed boost, but for the most part, the relationship between them is the same. The DOM will almost always, I mean, when I say will almost, just in case someone writes and says, no, in this one instance, it isn't.
Right.
But the XML text reader is the fastest way, full stop, to get some information out. Now, you pay for that, though, because you're having to go reader.read, and you're poking around at a very low level, and you don't get the luxury of backing up.
Yeah,
with an XML text reader.
And Scott, I just want to remind the listeners at this time that Hansel Minutes would not be possible without the generous support from our sponsors. And one of those sponsors is Automated QA, and they make a product called Test Complete, which is just a complete solution for testing in .NET. And it's great stuff. We love it, and that's why they're a sponsor. And so if you would please do us a favor and check out their site at automatedqa.com, and also let them know that you heard about them on Hansel Minutes. That will help, believe it or not, keep this show on the air. I recently wrote some code where I used an XML text reader to... or an XML reader, rather. You pass it a URL to an RSS feed, and then you use that reader on the on a data set, a read XML, pass it the reader, and you basically have loaded RSS data into a data set where you can mess around with it.
Yeah, using the XML reader as a parameter to other things is a really nice way of doing things. You can passing data from back and forth. You're really not passing the data as you are passing the cursor at a certain location.
Right.
Passing a DOM around means passing this chunk of memory, the handle of this chunk of memory around. Uh-huh. Passing a reader at a particular point is a really nice way to plug things in and out of the .NET framework. I like doing what are called XML reader writer pipelines, where I'll have an interface like, my XML handler. I have some interface that takes a reader and a writer. So I'll read out, I'd like to say I read out of the left hand and I'll write into the right hand.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone wants to pass me a reader and I'm going to do some big transformation, and I don't mean an XSLT transformation, but maybe I've got a gigabyte file and I want to turn all of my attributes into elements. Loading that giant XML export file into the DOM is unreasonable and probably not possible depending on how much memory you have.
Yeah.
But I can read that up with the text reader and I can make fundamental changes to what's going on in my document. I can convert attributes to elements. I can strip out comments. I can clean things up. A really common question is, how do I get automatic indenting in my document? Someone's going to give me an XML document and it's got no white space, but I like my documents to be tidy for maybe debugging purposes.
Yeah.
I can read that information in with a reader. And then with an XML text writer, which is the inverse of the XML text reader, I can then say XML formatting is going to be indented and then just read through and write out. And I'll get free indenting.
And of course, that still is nicely tight on the memory. So
very exactly, because you're not loading that entire document up.
But
into
you do
memory.
Have to cursor through the whole thing.
Well, you do.
Which you would do anyway in that case. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're dealing with this in a very, very small chunks of information at a time.
Yep.
Now, of course, the XML document that we're used to using is using a reader underlying it anyway. This is the neat thing about readers is that these are really the lowest level chunks of information. They hide the angle brackets from you.
Now, the XML document is different from the DOM, right?
No, the XML document
is the DOM.
The DOM is an implementation. The W3C said, there is this thing called the document object model that we want to view of some XML and the XML information set. The XML document is .NET's implementation of a DOM.
All right.
Now, the thing I keep saying that we haven't talked about is the XML information set. The idea that if you look at the angle brackets in the text and try to do like a diff, like doing a diff with a tool like Beyond Compare on an XML document doesn't really help you because the XML document might be different from a bytes per bytes might be different, but what it's trying to express, the information set within that document is the same. So if I had a document that had like books and the XML prefix, right, the shortcut before the element might be like A:books, where A is the namespace for Amazon. And I have another document where they just chose B as the namespace prefix. The documents might express the exact same XML information set, but if I did a diff, it would come out as radically different. So when you're doing XML diffs, you need to ask yourself, am I doing a low level, is this the same bytes or is this the same information? Another example would be empty elements. If I've got a start foo and then an end foo, or I've got a single foo that's pre-closed, like less than foo slash greater than.
Yeah.
Those express the same thing, an empty element, except one is short-circuited closed and one is not.
Hmm.
But they're expressing the same kind of a thing. The DOM tries to hide that and give you a pretty clear abstraction on top of that, so you get the same information set. So once you have these kind of underlying pieces and you become familiar with it, I suggest that everyone really try to deal with XML text reader and a validating reader and think about what you can do. You don't have to live at that really low level all the time. You can run through to a point within an XML reader, find something you recognize, and then maybe use the node, use an XML node reader, or use XML serialization. XML serialization, one of my favorite things.
So what's that?
That's when you can mark up a class, like I could say public class book, and then I can put attributes on it, .NET attributes that say, when I serialize a book, when I save a book as XML, I want it to have these elements in these places. So mm-hmm. it's the automatic kind of marshalling of data from the angle bracket world into the .NET CLR type world. And in .NET 1.1, you can say, get to a point within an XML reader and say, read inner XML, and then deserialize a document. And I've got an example of reading and saving XML fragments at shrinkster.com/C1L.
Okay.
And in .NET 2.0, you can say, like, read subtree, and you can, at a certain point within a document, kind of break off that reader and take a chunk out of it. So you get the best of both worlds. You don't have to build an XML serialization tree over the entire document, but mm-hmm. you don't have to keep poking around at the low level with the XML reader.
Cool.
So you can walk forward, grab a piece, and then keep moving.
Great.
But one of the really exciting things about the XML reader is that it is an abstract base class. The XML text reader and the validating reader are examples, you know, concrete instances of that. But we can build our own XML readers using the same model. Dare Obasanjo and Howard Howe wrote a XPath reader. XPath is that kind of tight language that you can say things like, give me all the books that have an author equal to this. You go like / books, open square bracket author, yada, 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 and you build a whole expression.
Sort of like SQL for XML.
Yeah.
Query
it's
language.
It's a query language for XML nodes.
Yeah.
But typically you have to load these things up into an XPath document, a faster, more optimized XML document that's optimized for XPath and for XSLT. And you have to then query from there. So how do I get the convenience of an XPath query without all the memory usage that I would get from an XPath document or an XML document? And Dare Obasanjo have got an XPath reader. So at shrinkster.com/C8W, Dare and Howard's example is up there. And I've actually linked to another really smart XML guy named Oleg Tchenko. And Oleg Tchenko's blog is at shrinkster.com/C8V. He's an XML pundit. Another great guy is Daniel Casolino at shrinkster.com/C8U. These are folks that I really keep an eye on when it comes to what's really interesting and going on within the XML space. The XPath reader that Dare and Howard have got has a subset of XPath. It lets you do those XPaths that would make sense within a forward-only context. So you can ask questions of the XPath reader and actually build up an XPath collection, and you could say, well, here are three different queries that I want you to watch, Mr. XPath reader.
Mm.
And I could say, rather than reader.read, I would say reader.read until match.
Nice.
And then ask it which match it found. So I would get the benefits of XPath and the speed and the convenience of an XML text reader.
That's shiny, to quote you.
It is shiny.
Yeah.
Another really shiny one, it was written by a fantastically brilliant woman named Helena Kupkova. And she actually wrote a thing called FastXML at shrinkster.com/C8Z, an XML processor and parser that is 8, 10, 20 times faster than the ones that came from Microsoft. She did it as her, I think, her master's thesis or her PhD thesis.
Awesome.
And she has written an XML bookmark reader. Remember how I said that XML readers are forward only?
Yeah.
Well, she's got one at shrinkster.com/C8Y that would let you mark a point within an XML reader, continue to move forward and play around, and then say return and remove bookmark and actually hop back to where you were and then keep going.
Awesome.
So it's kind of like TiVo for XML readers. I don't mean to overuse the TiVo reference too much, but I absolutely love this thing because a lot of times when you're doing an XML pipeline, like this XML reader writer pipeline where you're passing in readers and writers, you can be concerned that your implementation is going to misuse the reader. Someone might read one step too far or not far enough and kind of mess things up. With the bookmark reader, your outer pipeline can return back to a known point and continue on.
That's
so even
awesome.
Someone who wrote a malformed or poorly behaved chunk of that pipeline can have themselves saved by this bookmarking reader.
Wow, that's fabulous, man.
Well, some other cool things that you can do with XML readers are you can, and this will blow your mind, or I hope it does, you can make XML reader implementations over things that aren't themselves XML.
Huh.
So I'll pause for effect there, and you can just drink that in.
Yeah, so like a comma-separated value file or an any file or something like that?
No, absolutely. You've done your research. At shrinkster.com/C91, they've got an XML reader that reads CSV files. So what it's doing is, remember that the XML reader, when you say reader.read, it sets a number of variables and properties like node type, saying, what kind of node am I on? Am I on an element? Am I on an attribute? Am I on an end element? So if you wanted to provide a view over a CSV document, you could decide, what does that mean to you? Is it the comma? That is the XML element, or is it the quote within a CSV document?
Right.
You get to decide, and as long as you return the right answer so that the consumer thinks it's XML, the fact that you're underlying not reading XML doesn't matter. Because the XML reader doesn't care about angle brackets, it cares about this information set. So the XML CSV reader makes CSV files look like XML.
That's
cool. So what really is cool about that is you could then run an XSLT transform on a CSV file. You can actually write an XSLT, an XML style sheet transformation over the top of an XML CSV reader. So literally going directly from comma separated values to HTML or XML or something else without having to do intermediate steps. Because typically you would want to just read that CSV file in yourself, maybe save it to a data set or put it in a temporary file and then transform from there.
Have you had to use this yourself at work?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I can do a streaming transformation over any kind of thing, rather than loading it up into memory, I love doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The ability to make an XML reader over the top of something that isn't XML
is
a really
great.
Powerful thing. The INI reader is pretty cool. The XML INI reader by Ralph Westfall at shrinkster.com/C92 makes regular old INI files like INI files from back in the day look like XML. But what's interesting about that article is it gives you the tools to do this yourself with maybe flat files you have now.
Right.
If you're a company that has got flat files that you wish were XML or you know that you're going to move them to XML, you could start now by making that information set available. And then when you eventually do change them to XML, your consumers wouldn't actually care.
Sweet.
Another great one is by Aaron Sconard, actually, at shrinkster.com/C90, who's got a file system navigator. Basically, he's taken the interface of XPath node iterator and he's made it over the file system. So you could run XPath queries over your hard drive.
Wow.
Again, all of this is about implementing interfaces or making classes that derive from abstract-based classes that as long as you follow the contract, as long as you answer the questions and produce the right information, the fact that you're not reading underlying XML is an implementation detail.
Okay, Scott, that's very cool. What else are we going to talk about today?
Well, so we've been talking about extending some of the inner interfaces that Microsoft gives, like the XML reader. But there are other extension points within kind of the XML ethos that can be exploited. The XML MVP group, a bunch of MVPs have gotten together and they've added things to system.xml, the XML namespace, that they wish Microsoft would have done. Maybe Microsoft didn't have time, or it was an esoteric thing that they didn't feel was necessary. And up at xmlmvp.org, they've added a couple of classes that you can just download. They're BSD licensed. There's one for .NET 2.0, and there's one for .NET 1.1. And an interesting one is an XSL reader. So this is a transformation. We know oftentimes we'll do XSLT transformations where you'll take a DOM and apply a style sheet to it, a tree transformation language. And typically that gets transformed into another DOM. They've got an XSL reader that lets you read the results of that transformation as if it were an XML reader. That
nice.
What's significant about this is if you were stringing lots of things together, making a pipeline of readers into readers into writers into readers, then you could take something like this and you could say, I'm going to take this CSV file and read it with the CSV reader, do an XSL transform with some XSLT, and the results will go straight into an XSL reader. And this is important because in .NET 2.0, the XSL compiled transform, remember how we said that they have a new class in
right.
.NET that has compiled transforms?
Right.
Well, because of the way it's doing that compilation, they've thrown away the ability to transform into an XML reader. So this team has basically put that functionality back. And they're
very
making
cool.
it available. And there's other great features that they've added to XML that you might want to take a look at XMLMVP.org. Another thing that they've added is what's called EXSLT. And you can learn about that at EXSLT.org. These are kind of formalized extensions to XSLT. When you're writing this XSLT transformation language and you hit a wall, Microsoft lets you throw script in there. You know, and a lot of people have with MS XML and back in the COM days and the VB days, you'd throw JavaScript or VB script inside of your XSLT transformation. And when you did the transform, they would fire up the scripting language and you'd have little opportunities to poke around in there. But they've actually formalized this XSLT series of libraries, EXSLT.org, and they've built support for these libraries into .NET and the MVP XML library. What's cool about that is that before, when you wrote JavaScript and VBScript, you were pretty much stuck with whatever XSLT transformer you were using. You're pretty much stuck on Microsoft. But now EXSLT, these libraries are described in a way that is more about the interface and less about the implementation. So they've got a .NET implementation of EXSLT, which means I could actually run it on different implementations of an XSL transformer.
Hmm.
I could take an XSLT that maybe a Linux user was using against a Java XML library and transforming on a Linux machine, but he used these libraries, these methods that are available via EXSLT, and they'd still work on .NET. So it's almost like saying cross-platform XSLT. XSLT at its purest sense is something that if you just write pure XSLT, for the most part, if they follow the spec, you can use any number of transforming engines. But as soon as you start extending it and putting in script of your own, you're pretty much stuck and out of basically written Microsoft-specific XSLT. This EXSLT has become enough of a standard now that there are a lot of choices for people who are writing these style sheets.
Smoking.
It is pretty sweet.
Yeah. You've been writing a lot about XML this week. What are some posts that you want to point us to?
I did some XSLT stuff a while back at shrinkster.com/BF0, talking about how when you do XSLT, you've really got to just test. And we actually got to interact with some of the guys at the XML perf team at Microsoft, and they said that even though you can write XSLT, and most often everything that you write is portable, if you're really serious about performance, you need to tweak it for the quirks of the particular parser that you're using. We
okay.
did some performance testing on the COM-based MSXSL 4, MSXML 6. We used .NET 1.0, 2.0, and learned some techniques that can make XML transformations more powerful and more efficient.
Okay.
Another one is some fragment writing. A lot of times people want to write out an XML document from an object, but they don't want all the namespaces. Maybe they want some backward compatibility. They don't really want an XML document. They want an XML fragment. We've got an XML fragment writer up at shrinkster.com/C1K. And then, as I mentioned before, reading those fragments back in with the serializer at shrinkster.com/C1L.
Okay, what are some XML sites that you visit regularly?
Well, so blogs that I read of folks that are into XML deeply, like I'd mentioned, Oleg Kachenko at shrinkster.com/C8V is amazing. I just love reading his stuff. Daniel Casalino at shrinkster.com/C8 U has got a whole series on XML performance. I love reading stuff by Daryl Bisanjo. I love reading stuff by Aaron Sconard. Anything up on MSDN about XML, they really have some brilliant stuff. Anytime you can read an article by Helena Kupkova, whose blog I have been unable to find, but she is absolutely brilliant. And reading the code inside of the XML bookmark reader is pretty amazing.
Great.
And actually, a link that I forgot to put up, but I think you could probably find it up on my blog, is a thing called an SGML reader. You know how HTML is not well-formed? There's no rule that says that you absolutely have to have a closing tag.
Right.
When you open a tag, like the BR tag is a real common tag that people don't close. You can't open up a regular old HTML document as an XML file, as an XML document, because if it's not well-formed, then it's not XML. Well, Chris Lovett wrote a thing called the SGML reader, and you can Google for this. It'll be the first hit. The SGML reader is an XML reader, right? So he's derived from XML reader, and what he does is he actually auto-closes tags. So if he sees that there's a tag that's been opened, and then he gets farther along into the document and notices that if I read the next element, that this is going to be an invalid document, he will go back and automatically close elements that need to be closed so that a poorly formed document, like whether it be OFX, in my case, the financial exchange format, or whether it's HTML, you'll get valid XML. So if you have some HTML you want to clean up, or you need to parse some XML that's not necessarily well-formed, the SGML reader is a really great way to do that. This is a lot of information in a really short period of time, and XML is one of those things that, you know, you could get really deeply into, and there are people who spend their entire career focused on XML. But the thing that I want to get across to folks is that, A, if you don't want to see angle brackets, you don't have to. There are so many things that allow you to look at XML without ever seeing an angle bracket. It's really about the information set, not the brackets.
And that said, you know, it's always a good idea to have at least one or two really hotshot XML guys on your staff, in your development team.
On your instant messenger.
Yeah. And it's probably good if it was you.
One of the things that my boss says is that every problem in computer science can be solved by one additional layer of abstraction.
Yeah, that's
a
good idea.
And dealing with XML, having these nice clean interfaces and then having just a little layer of abstraction around them gives you a lot of flexibility, whether you're parsing RSS or pulling information out of a CSV file. Those layers of abstraction and a nice clean library like the .NET base class library and system.xml make life a lot easier.
And that's a show. Everything you always wanted to know about XML. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you, listeners, and we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.